From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Guys and Dolls, we talk with the music director of the Broadway revival, Eddie Strauss, and we'll hear music from the revival's cast album. When composer Frank Lesser wrote the score for Guys and Dolls, he made demo recordings to demonstrate to backers and to the cast what the song sounded like. Now those demo recordings, featuring Frank Lesser himself, have been compiled on a CD. We'll hear the demos and talk with the archivist who discovered them and produced the new CD. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President-elect Bill Clinton issued a statement today supporting President Bush's decision to send military forces to Somalia. NPR's Mara Liasson reports from Little Rock.
Clinton has not wavered in his support of President Bush's decision to send U.S. military forces to lead the United Nations mission in Somalia. Today he said he shared the president's determination to ensure its success. He said that President Bush had demonstrated that the American people will do their part to help bring the tragic suffering in Somalia to an end. The president-elect has been briefed daily by administration officials. Today, representatives of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the State Department, and the CIA flew to Little Rock to brief him in person. Clinton's aides would not say whether the president-elect had offered his opinion about the mission during those briefings. Clinton seems determined not to share the stage with Bush on the issue. If he had wanted a higher profile on Somalia, he could have made his statement in person instead of in writing. In Little Rock, I'm Mara Liasson.
The Bush administration is reportedly considering taking action to enforce the United Nations no-fly zone over Bosnia. The Associated Press quoted administration officials as saying that they were responding to reports that Bosnian Serbs have used combat helicopters in their operations. The officials told the AP that the United States is consulting with Britain, France, and other countries on a possible new UN resolution that would authorize military action to enforce the no-fly zone. The no-fly zone was established by the UN Security Council in October. In November, the UN detected more than 175 flights, although none of them has been definitively judged to be part of a military operation. There was a modest improvement in the employment outlook in November as businesses added over 100,000 new jobs and the jobless rate dropped 0.2 points to 7.2%. NPR's John Idsty reports.
The November employment figures were better than expected, and many economists believe they provide further evidence that the economy is breaking out of the doldrums. The unemployment rate has fallen for 5 straight months, but until November it was falling largely because the workforce was shrinking, partly because workers were discouraged. In November, workers apparently thought their chances for employment had improved, so many entered the job market again, helping to swell the workforce by more than 250,000 people. Another piece of good news in the report was the addition of 35,000 manufacturing jobs. The growth in the number of jobs raises doubts about the need for an expensive government stimulus program, which would create jobs but also drive the federal deficit higher. I'm John Idstein, Washington.
On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained more than 12 points to finish the day at 3,288.68. Advances led declines by a slight margin in heavy trading. This is NPR News. The American Civil Liberties Union said today that President Bush does not have the authority to send U.S. troops to Somalia without first obtaining congressional approval. The ACLU urged Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell and House Speaker Thomas Foley to call an emergency session of Congress, saying that congressional approval is required by the Constitution. The ACLU said it was taking no position on whether sending troops to Somalia is a good policy. The request may revive debate over the president's authority under the War Powers Act. The United Nations peacekeepers held hostage by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia are back in Phnom Penh 3 days after they were kidnapped by the guerrillas. The 6 military observers were released after Indonesian soldiers reached the hostage site. Sue Downey reports from Phnom Penh.
The team leader, Lieutenant Colonel Mark Walton of Britain, said they were not harmed during their 72-hour ordeal. And they had no major complaints, except they were covered in mosquito and flea bites. He said they twice attempted to leave the hostage site. The first time, the Khmer Rouge soldiers guarding them fired warning shots. The second time, the Khmer Rouge took away their inflatable boats and hid the air pumps. He said at no time did they think they would not leave the site. It was just a matter of waiting for negotiators. The six men all said they were more concerned about the anguish their families were going through than their own experience. For National Public Radio, this is Sue Downey in Phnom Penh.
North Dakota is holding an election today to determine who will succeed the late Senator Quentin Burdick. Voters will choose among three candidates, former Democratic Senator Kent Conrad, State Representative Jack Dalrymple, and Independent Daryl Larson. The winner will serve out the two terms remaining in Burdick's term. Voter turnout is expected to be light, and candidates say that get-out-the-vote efforts are an important part of their strategies. This is NPR.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you said Guys and Dolls has one of musical comedy's greatest scores, you'd get no argument from me. Lots of people feel that way, which is why there's been such excitement about the Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls. My guest is the revival's music director, Eddie Strauss. He was also the music director for the new cast recording. A documentary about the making of the album will be aired on public television this weekend on Great Performances. Strauss was also the music director for the Lincoln Center revival of Anything Goes and the Broadway productions of Drood and Evita. Guys and Dolls first opened on Broadway in 1950. It's based on Damon Runyon's stories, and it's about small-time gamblers, chorus girls, and the missionary woman who is trying to reform them. The score is by the great Frank Lesser.
Yes, sir, when you see a guy reach for stars in the sky, you can bet that he's doing it for some doll.
When you spot a John waiting out in the rain, chances are he's insane, as only a John can be for a Jane.
When you meet a gent paying all kinds of rent for a flat that could flatten a Taj Mahal,
call it sad, call it funny, but it's better than even money. That guy's only doing it for some doll. When you see a Joe...
So tell me what the music director does in a Broadway show.
The music director is, I believe, responsible for all things vocal, all things sung. One of the music director's first jobs is to detail with the singers and the chorus the way words are pronounced. For example, I believe we should say guys and dolls, that the guy's only doing it for some doll. For one thing, it rhymes with a lot of other words, Taj Mahal. So it has to be pronounced doll. But you sit in a room with 30 singers and you teach the final chorus, the curtain call, where everyone sings guys and dolls, and half the people sing doll. The guy's only doing it for some doll, because there's a certain regional accent that people have that causes them to pronounce the word differently. So that annoys me. I mean, I'm really very sensitive to the way words are pronounced. So one of my first jobs was to try and convince everyone to say doll, which, believe me, is very difficult. I'm still running after people, trying to get them to say that. Also, you're there for all the rehearsals of the scene, so you're basically in charge of the underscoring music, the mood, setting the mood, how you go into a scene change, how much music is necessary to change the scene before you go into another one. And then when you know how much time there is, how deftly can you do it so that it seems seamless? All the little magic tricks that you can do to make it a magical evening, that, you know, the nuts and bolts underneath, that has to do with the music.
Since you handle the pronunciation in songs, did you work with Faith Prince on how she pronounces the lyrics in Adelaide's Lament?
Oh, sure. I mean, she has a lot of her own special qualities and brought them to it. But, you know, Faith Prince had done Adelaide before in another production or two. And this version of her Adelaide is different than the other ones. There's a kind of a realism in this one, a bigger heart, I would say, more humanity, I would say, than the other productions, which had a lot more characterization.
You know, Adelaide is a showgirl, and in the original cast recording, she's sung by Vivian Blaine. It's a role that's sometimes done very kind of Betty Boop, really played for
right.
The, you know, not very bright aspect.
Right.
So tell me some more about
about how you worked with her and what kinds of discussions you had about
her. Well,
how
I'll tell you the best story I can say about her is that she, so many girls came in to audition for Adelaide with this Betty Boop quality. They all sang a song from the show. One was more, if I could say, obnoxious than the next, giving a kind of a Brooklynese secretary gum chewing version of Vivian Blaine, who 40 years ago really wasn't all that caricaturized, but 40 years later, people amplify that in their mind. Faith Prince came in, and she sang Something Wonderful from The King and I, and as Faith Prince, as a woman who loves a guy, and it melted your heart. It was innocent and sweet and wonderful, and very tuneful and very on pitch, you know. But it was direct and from the heart, and she got the part that minute.
Adelaide's Lament has a really clever lyric. Did you and Faith Prince work on calling attention to certain parts of the lyric?
Sure. Another thing a music director does, especially in a revival, is try and convince everybody who's singing that they are singing something for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a club act and you're singing a standard song that has become a standard over the years, you can stylize it and backphrase and do tricks to the melody that I think the composer would not be happy about if it were the first time the song was being heard. And when you're doing a musical, you have to know that it's the first time, no matter how, if you're in the fifth year of a show, every night you have to sing a song as if you've never sung it before, because the emotion in the scene carries you to a place where you have to sing something, and you have to tell the character and also the audience how you feel in song. So my function is to make sure that I think that the thoughts are happening in order and that the song is being sung for the first time.
Okay, well, this is Faith Prince singing Adelaide's Lament.
It says here, the average unmarried female, basically insecure, due to some long frustration, may react with psychosomatic symptoms difficult to endure, affecting the upper respiratory tract. In other words, just from waiting around for that plain little band of gold, a person can develop a cold. You can spray her wherever you figure the streptococci lurk. You can give her a shot for whatever she's got, but it just won't work. If she's tired of getting the fisheye from the hotel clerk, a person can develop a cold. It says here, the female remaining single, just in the legal sense, shows an erotic tendency, see note. Tendency, see note. Oh, see note. Oh, here we go. Like that. Chronic organic syndromes, toxic or hypertense, involving the eye, the ear, the nose, and throat. In other words, just from worrying whether the wedding is on or off, a person can develop a cough.
That's Faith Prince from the cast recording of The Revival of Guys and Dolls, which is now on Broadway. My guest is the music director for the show, Eddie Strauss. I want to play Sumi, one of the great duets from Guys and Dolls, and on the new cast recording it features Faith Prince, who we just heard, and Nathan Lane in the role of Nathan Detroit. And she wants to get married. He doesn't. And now he's kind of leaving her for a few hours to go to a revival meeting. Of course, she doesn't believe that that's really what he's going for. Tell me about how you worked on this song with Prince and Lane.
I think they're such good actors. And I, as a music director, try so hard to be sensitive to the acting moments, even at the expense of the singing a lot of the times. And so this Sumi is almost a scene in itself. A lot of emotions happen, a lot of change occurs. In the beginning of the scene, they're just bickering. And at the end of the scene, they're so tender with each other. It's clearly obvious that they love each other and that it's something beyond just a humorous song about haranguing each other. And that's something that developed. They're such good actors. The music is so good that I encouraged it, if I can say that, to become a little something more than it might have been originally. And because they're so good, I think it's clear to see what they do.
Now, it's funny, you know, in the original cast, it was Sam Levine who played the role of Nathan Detroit, and he could not sing. So he basically just hollers
right,
this song.
Right.
Were you glad that you had somebody to work with who could sing better than Sam Levine?
Well, it was a big surprise. There's a big note at the end, a big high note at the end, which you'll never hear Sam Levine even approach. And Nathan is not the world's greatest singer, but he can sing well, and he does sing that note. And that's a happy surprise. But I wouldn't want him to sing every note that's written at the expense of the comedy or at the expense of the drama of the scene just because he happens to be a good singer. I think that's a trap, and I don't think we fell into it.
Well, this is Sumi, sung by Faith Prince and Nathan Lane from the new cast recording of Guys and Dolls.
Nathan, why can't we elope right now?
Because, well, I gotta go to a prayer meeting.
Nathan, this is the biggest lie you ever told me!
But I promise you it's true!
You promise me this, you promise me that, you promise me anything under the sun, and you give me a kiss, and you're grabbing your hat, and you're off to the races again when I think of the time gone by.
Adelaide.
And I think of the way I tried.
Adelaide.
I could honestly die.
Call a lawyer and sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you. Give a holler and hate me, hate me. Go ahead, hate me.
The best years of my life I was a fool to give to you.
All right, already, I'm just a no-good nick. All right, already, it's true. So new, so sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you.
You gamble it here, you gamble it there, you gamble on everything all except me, and I'm sick of you keeping me up in the air till you're back in the money again when I think of the time gone by.
Adelaide, Adelaide.
And I look at the way I'm
Adelaide!
Gone. I could honestly die.
Serve a paper and sue me.
That's from the cast recording of the revival of Guys and Dolls. My guest is the music director for the show, Eddie Strauss. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eddie Strauss, music director of the Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls. I want to get to I'll Know, the duet that's sung between Sarah, who works for the mission, the Save a Soul mission, and Skye Masterson, who's a gambler. So they both not only represent different things, but they have very different sounds. What did you work with the performers Josie DeGuzman and Peter Gallagher on with this?
I think, again, telling their story, telling each other, falling in love during the song, but trying not to let the other person, well, or telling the other person that he or she is not the one. And at the end of the song, you have to imagine that they probably will be. Basically, I didn't do too much dramatically. I need the song to flow naturally. I think the most important thing is for it to flow right out of the dialogue. She's got a sense that she gets halfway through, don't worry, I'll know, for I've imagined every bit of him. And the verse, that's the verse of the song, for me, the way it can be the most realistically played is the verse of the song has to sound like it comes immediately out of the dialogue as just a continuation of the thought. In an older style or with different actresses or maybe a different music director, that moment of the song beginning would probably be very noticeable, and the soprano would have a distinctly different sound. We actually lowered the key of her verse of I'll Know so that her singing voice would be exactly in the range of her speaking voice. On the original cast album, the key is higher. I think she just sings right from the beginning. You don't hear the dialogue before. If you did hear the dialogue before, you would hear a woman in a basically medium-range chest voice say, "Don't worry, I'll know, Fora," and then become a soprano when the song starts. I think there are better ways to do that. I think that we can tell a story more naturally and continually, and this is one way we did it, by lowering the verse and have it sound as conversational as the dialogue before it.
That's interesting. Why don't we listen to it?
It is nice to know, Miss Sarah, that somewhere in the world is a guy who might appeal to you. I wonder what this guy will be like.
He will not be a gambler.
I'm not interested in what he will not be. I am interested in what he will be.
Don't worry. I'll know. For I've imagined every bit of him, from his strong moral fiber to the wisdom in his head to the homey aroma of his pipe.
You have wished yourself a Scarsdale Galahad, the breakfast-eating Brooks Brothers type.
Yes, and I shall meet him when the time is ripe.
You've got the guy all figured out.
I have.
Including what he smokes. All figured out, huh?
All figured out. I'll know when my love comes along. Broadway romance.
And you'll know at a glance by the two pair of pants.
I'll know by the calm, steady voice, those feet on the ground. I'll know as I run to his arms that at last I've come home safe and sound. Until then, I shall wait.
That's I'll Know with Josie DeGuzman and Peter Gallagher from the cast recording of Guys and Dolls. There's a documentary on the making of this album coming up on public television. My guest, Eddie Strauss, is the music director for the show and, of course, for the record as well. What was it like to work with the singers on the song The Oldest Established? This is, you know, this is the one about the permanent floating crap game. Mm-hmm. So you've got people who are supposed to all be gamblers singing this. So you don't want them to sound very formal or very square. They're supposed to be streetwise gamblers.
Right. That's one of those places where the music director gets to dictate how things are said. And there are 30 people there, so they're all going to have one version or another, and you get to say, nope, it's this way. Of course, if the composer were there, I guess he could argue. He's allowed. But in the song, for example, in the music, when they say Nathan, Detroit, there's a long note written. So everyone, according to the way the music is written, would sing Detroit. And that would sound like a bunch of men singing, where really you just want them all patting each other on the back and palling around and lifting Nathan up on their shoulders. So I made it short. Nathan, Detroit. If you're and just ways to make the singing go with the style of the gamblers, just as you say. One thing also I got to do, which is have them say reliable. I like the word reliable rather than reliable. And especially having it, you get to say to people, okay, sing it this way, now sing it that way, and you get to choose which one is the best one. And
just sing that for us in context.
Well, they would go, why? The wrong way would be, why it's good old reliable Nathan. My way is, why it's good old reliable Nathan. And I just think reliable is an easier, it just sounds better. It flows mm-hmm. easier. And you know what they're saying. After we did good old reliable Nathan many times, just for fun, I wanted to hear it the other way. And they'd sing, why it's good old reliable. It sounded funny, so that's just a little example of something that the music director decides.
You know, although it would be a problem to have this kind of group singing sound too formal, Another problem is going in the opposite direction and kind of overdoing the colloquialisms that Damon Runyon initially wrote,
right.
you know, and that Frank Lesser adapted for the songs. Was that a problem, too, not going too far in the opposite direction?
Well, and then everyone has their own version of that, too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times in Guys and Dolls when people would start sounding like a character in Little Abner because doing it for some doll, they would sing, doing it, or they would just throw away G's at the ends of words because they thought they were hip and colloquial. But in truth, the Damon Runyon characters were very careful to pronounce the ends of their words, and as we know, there were no contractions even. I do not believe, they would say, rather than I don't. So people had their own versions of slang or colloquialisms, but they were, as you said, they went too far. So we have to police that.
Why don't we listen to The Oldest Established?
Nathan, concentrate on the crap game. The town is up to here with high players. The Greeks in town.
Brandy Bottle Bates.
Scranton Slim.
I know, I could make a fortune. But where can I have the game?
The Biltmore Garage wants a grand.
But we ain't got a grand on hand.
And they've now got a lock on the door of the gym at PS 84.
There's the stock room behind McCluskey's bar.
But Mrs. McCluskey ain't a good scout.
And things being how they are, the back of the police station is out.
So the Biltmore Garage is the spot.
But the 1,000 bucks we ain't got.
Why, it's good old reliable Nathan. Nathan, Detroit. If you're looking for action, you'll furnish the spot. Even when the heat is on, it's never too hot. Not for good old reliable Nathan, for it's always just a short walk to the oldest established permanent floating crab game in New York. There are well-heeled shooters everywhere, everywhere. There are well-heeled shooters everywhere. And an awful lot of lettuce for the fella who can get us.
You're listening to music from the cast recording of Guys and Dolls. My guest is the show's musical director, Eddie Strauss. So are you in the pit every night conducting?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Does that get a little tiresome after a while, conducting the same score every night?
Tiresome? No, tiring.
Tiring, right?
Yes. There's always something. It's never routine. It can't be routine because there's always an understudy or there's a change that happens or a light that doesn't go on. There's always something to make one night different from the night before. And one thing, you have to be on your toes to deal with it. But another thing, it just keeps that live experience happening. And I really believe that the audience gets the most of us every single day.
What happened last night that was different?
Well, I'll tell you, last night in the song Luck Be a Lady, there's a bridge of the song, and there are two bridges, and they're both different. And the actor sang the second bridge first. Now, my problem as the conductor is, if he continues to the end of the song from the second bridge, I'm in big trouble because I'm miles away from him. But if he thinks to sing the first bridge at the point where the second one comes, or even sings the second one again, then at least I'm okay. You know, we don't have what they call a train wreck. And that's what he did. He sang the second bridge twice, and I don't think anyone in the audience knew it. But for those moments when we're leading up and the music is rolling along, and I'm not too sure what's exactly going to happen, because what if he just sings a big ending note and I'm in the middle of the song? So that's one of the things.
Eddie Strauss, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Eddie Strauss is the music director of the Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls. The cast recording is on RCA Records. A documentary of the making of the record will be shown on Great Performances this weekend on public television. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Coming up, some great Broadway songs sung by the composer himself. For the first time, the public can hear the demo recordings Frank Lesser made when he wrote the songs for Guys and Dolls. We'll hear the recordings and talk with the archivist who discovered them and compiled them on a new CD. More music by Frank Lesser coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Ann Taylor. President Bush has announced that U.S. troops are being sent to Somalia in an effort to help ease suffering and save lives in a nation where thousands are facing starvation. Pentagon officials say this operation will involve some 28,000 U.S. troops on what they see as a 2 or 3 month-long mission. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
The president consulted for about an hour with congressional leaders this morning before announcing the Somali deployment. Most lawmakers support the operation, which the president said was aimed at opening up supply routes and getting food to the Somalis who need it. Other lawmakers continue to have reservations about what they see as an open-ended commitment. The president, however, said the country has no choice but to intervene.
The people of Somalia, especially the children of Somalia, need our help. We're able to ease their suffering. We must help them live.
The president said the U.S. alone can't right the world's wrongs, but some crises can't be resolved without America's involvement. President-elect Bill Clinton, whose administration will likely inherit the operation, said he supports Mr. Bush's decision. This is Brian Naylor at the White House.
In Bosnia, troops have started moving civilians and wounded soldiers from just outside of Sarajevo, scene of heavy Serbian attacks. A local commander has called for UN help in moving some 6,000 civilians from the area. As heavy fighting continued, 2 UN convoys reached Sarajevo, but aid flights are still suspended and not slated to continue before Sunday at the earliest. The area of the heaviest fighting is near the capital's airport and near a main highway to Sarajevo. In Moscow, at the Russian Congress of People's Deputies, President Boris Yeltsin has proposed amendments to the Russian Constitution that would strip him of much of his power to pursue economic reforms. NPR's Mike Schuster reports from Moscow.
The amendments amount to a nearly total shift of the balance of power in Russia between the parliament and the president. These amendments would deprive Yeltsin of his power to name the heads of the most important government ministries, and it gives the parliament the power to fire ministers when they are not to the deputy's liking. The parliament, not the president, would also have the power to reorganize the executive branch. Yeltsin appealed to the deputies today to reject these amendments because, in his words, they will destabilize Russia. Amendments to the Russian Constitution must receive a two-thirds majority, but Yeltsin's supporters in the Congress fear they will not be able to muster the 200 or so votes needed to block adoption. Yeltsin has let it be known he will address the nation if he is defeated, in which case, his supporters say, he will be forced to take unspecified extraordinary measures. The vote on the amendments is expected tomorrow morning. I'm Mike Schuster in Moscow.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials moved up more than 12 points to close at 3,288.68 on volume of more than 227 million shares. Trading again today was heavy. This is NPR News. A fire on a grounded Greek tanker off of northern Spain has now been contained, but a fight to control an oil slick continues. Several hundred people who had been moved out of their coastal homes after the ship went aground have been allowed back in again. Oil gushing from the tanker is threatening beaches and vital fish in the region, and rescuers say a first order of business is to save birds that are now covered with oil. Government officials have ordered fishermen to work over the weekend to catch as much shellfish as possible before the oil slick reaches mussel beds. Officials say the ship ran aground after breaching maritime rules on approaching port. In a speech today at Oxford University, former President Ronald Reagan called for NATO intervention in Bosnia, and he endorsed the idea of U.S. troops protecting food aid in Somalia. From London, NPR's Michael Goldfarb reports.
Saying that
evil still stalks the planet, Reagan explained that the end of the Cold War did not mean the end of conflicts. He spoke to students at the Oxford Union, the university's debating society. Students lined up for a full block to get into the hall. Those who did get in heard Reagan describe the former Yugoslavia as a cauldron of hatred. He expressed bewilderment that a Europe moving towards closer union could refrain from action while abominations took place in Yugoslavia. He said the Serbs should be given an ultimatum to stop shelling civilians, and if they ignored the ultimatum, their military supply depots should be bombed. The former president also endorsed the idea of Germany and Japan being admitted to the United Nations Security Council. I'm Michael Goldfarb in London.
In Canada, that nation's government says the country's unemployment rate increased to 11.8% last month, up from 11.3% in October. The rate is the highest among major industrialized nations and the highest for Canada since July of 1983. This is NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I love to hear great composers sing their own songs. I've just heard the late Frank Lesser sing for the first time, and you're about to hear him too. Lesser wrote the scores for Guys and Dolls, The Most Happy Fella, and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. When he wrote his shows, he made demo recordings to demonstrate to the cast what the songs sound like. There's a new CD of those demos. My guest is the archivist who discovered the demos and produced the new CD. Joseph Weiss is the copyright manager of Paul McCartney's publishing company, which acquired Lesser's publishing company in 1979. Along with this acquisition came hundreds of unindexed tapes. Weiss is also the McCartney Company's resident music theater expert. He listened to the tapes and discovered to his delight some of them featured Lesser himself. Lesser is the first voice you'll hear on this version of Fugue for Tin Horns from Guys and Dolls.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do. This guy says the horse can do. If he says the horse can do, can do, can do.
Are you crazy? I'm picking Valentine, 'cause on the morning line, the guy has got him figured at 5 to 9.
But look at Effort Taffy, wins it by a half, according to this here and on telegraph. I tell you, Effort
Taffy,
Valentine, I got the horse right here.
Just a fine little Valentine. Besides the jockeys, brother's a friend of mine.
Now just a minute, boys, I got the beatbox noise. It says the great-grandfather was equipoise.
For Paul Revere, I'll fight. I hear his foot's all right. Of course,
this guy says the horse shows
right last night.
I tell you, epitaph,
Paul Revere,
I got the horse right here.
Joseph Weiss, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Do you know who we've been listening to with Frank Lesser on Fugue for Tin Horns?
Well, there are two other vocalists on that track. The male is Milton DeLugge, who is well known, or has been well known for several decades. He was a co-writer of Frank Lesser's. He's the co-writer of three popular polkas with Frank Lesser. And also was a musical director of The Tonight Show for several years. And the other vocalist is Sue Bennett, a name that was not known to me until recently when I spoke to Mr. DeLugge, and he identified her.
So tell me what the experience was like the first time you found one of these Frank Lesser demo recordings and you put it on and heard it.
It's a very hard thing to explain. Not only because of how great the recordings themselves are, but because of how I feel about Frank Lesser. It was a very exciting experience, and it was immediately satisfying. The first time that I heard his voice, I wasn't even sure it was his voice. It was a guess, because it was one of his songs. I honestly don't remember now which one it was. But it was clearly not a commercial singer, and it was just that interesting voice with a piano. There are, I'd say, five geniuses in musical theater whose names always come up when we talk about the creation of American musical theater. And they are George Gershwin, Jerome Kern, Richard Rodgers, Irving Berlin, and Cole Porter. And I always feel that there should be a sixth name in there, that Frank Lesser's name belongs in that group. And there are a few reasons it probably doesn't show up there. One of them is that his output for Broadway was only five scores, and it only spanned 15 years. And that he's actually a later writer than the rest of them. He wasn't there for the formative years, which all of the others were. And he also wasn't excessively self-promoting, which is not to say the others were, but that had he chosen to do so, I think his name could have become a household word just like the others.
Well, one of just the revelations of this record is listening to Frank Lesser sing Sue Me from Guys and Dolls. And this is a different version of it than you'd hear on any of the cast recordings or in any of the shows. Do you want to describe what's different about it?
Yes. Well, two things are different. One is that it's not a duet, which is the way the song is done in the show. And it also has a verse which isn't used in the show. And it's a very sweet, low-key, subtle, as far as the comedy is concerned, version of the song. It's not only done this way on this demonstration recording. It was actually published this way at the time Guys and Dolls opened on Broadway. And there were recordings by other artists in this style.
Now, in the original cast recording, Sam Levine sang the part, or played the part, I should say, yeah, of Nathan Detroit. That's the same part that was played by Frank Sinatra in the movie. And Sam Levine couldn't sing, so he just kind of, like, brays the song. You know, he just kind of hollers the song, whereas Frank Lesser sings it as a lovely ballad with really kind of funny lyrics.
Yes.
Why don't we hear Frank Lesser singing Sue Me?
So you're all the time right, and I'm all the time wrong. So my character's weak, and your character's strong. So your brow is so high, and my brow is so low. Well, brow, schmow, I'm close to you now. And all I can tell you is, oh, go sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you. Give a holler and hate me, hate me. Go ahead, hate me, I love you. All right already, I'm just a no good Nick. All right already, it's true, so new, so sue me. Sue me, what can you do me? I love you.
It's the late composer Frank Lesser singing his song Sue Me from Guys and Dolls. Lesser wrote the score. This demo recording is featured on a new album called An Evening with Frank Lesser that was produced by my guest Joseph Weiss. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joseph Weiss, who works with Frank Lesser's publishing company and the Frank Lesser Archives. And Weiss has put together a new album of Frank Lesser's demo recordings of his own scores. It's called An Evening with Frank Lesser. And Lesser composed the music for such shows as Guys and Dolls, The Most Happy Fella, and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. You got these Frank Lesser demonstration discs just in a kind of bundle, I guess. How come do you think they weren't taken better care of?
Well, I think the reason they weren't taken better care of is that, to a large extent, I don't think the people who were handling the catalog for several years realized that that's what was there. The way discs and tapes of this kind are often marked would be as simple as a label that says, Luck Be a Lady. And there would be hundreds of discs marked Luck Be a Lady in a catalog like that. And most of the time, they'd identify the artist. On a demonstration disc, the artist is rarely identified, whether it's a commercial singer or the original composer. So I don't think that anyone neglected material because they didn't care, but just because it wasn't obvious that it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that made it such a pleasure to play through the material, was that if I picked up a disc that said Luck Be a Lady and dropped the needle on it, I didn't know if I was going to hear just another reference dub of the cast album, or if the voice that came over the speakers was going to be the genius who wrote the song.
What a thrill this all must have been.
It was. It was. The period, it was about 10 years ago that all of this took place, that my playing through the recordings took place. And I was fairly new to the music business at the time. And it was an incredible experience for me. It was, now it occurs as a very sweet, romantic period for me to be new to the business and yet have the privilege of listening, and listening alone in the, you know, the late hours of the day, to material that probably hadn't been heard by anyone for decades.
Here's another song from the album that Joseph Weiss produced of Frank Lesher's demo recordings. This is I'll Know.
I'll know when my love comes along. I'll know then and there. I'll know at the sight of her face, how I care, how I care, how I care. And I'll stop and I'll stare, and I'll know long before we can speak. I'll know in my heart, I'll know, and I won't. Am I right? Am I wise? Am I smart? But I'll stop and I'll stare at that face in the throng. Yes, I know when my love comes along.
Do you know the occasions in which Frank Lesser sang? Did he only sing to make demo recordings, or did he ever perform?
No, definitely not only to make the demo recordings. He used to perform frequently at parties with his first wife, Lynn Lesser. And in fact, the song Baby, It's Cold Outside, which is one of his greatest songs and won the Academy Award, was originally done by him and his wife at parties.
My guest is Joseph Weiss, the archivist who produced the new CD, An Evening with Frank Lesser. More in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. Let's see what's coming up on All Things Considered. Noah Adams is with us. Noah, what do you have on the American troops in Somalia?
Lots of things tonight, Terry. Brian Naylor has the story about President Bush's talk with the nation on Somalia. Sunni Khalid outlines the Pentagon's plans, what happens in military terms in Somalia after the troops go ashore. Mara Liasson from Little Rock, Arkansas, on President Clinton's supportive response to the Somali action. Also, Robert Siegel will talk with Maya Angelou about being asked to write a poem for the Clinton inauguration coming up next month. And Juan Williams, the journalist, on this question: would Malcolm X, had he lived, become a conservative, possibly even a Republican?
Thanks, Noah. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. There's a new CD featuring demo recordings of composer Frank Lesser performing the songs he wrote for the shows Guys and Dolls, The Most Happy Fella, and How to Succeed. My guest, Joseph Weiss, is the archivist and copyright manager who produced the new CD. So how were you first introduced to the music of Frank Lesser?
Oh, that's a good question for me. I was first introduced to the music of Frank Lesser at exactly the same time that I first knew that musicals existed, that they were written by one person or a team of persons for the intention of putting on a show. When I was in the fourth grade, we had a music class, and a teacher came in one day with three cast albums, The Sound of Music, The Music Man, and Guys and Dolls. And she explained to us how musical theater operated in New York, and at least on the level that a fourth grader could understand. And so at exactly the same time, I learned what musical theater was, and I heard Fugue for Tin Horns.
Well, I could see why the Frank Lesser record would have really stood out among those three.
Well, they were all pretty striking because we heard the train sequence from the Music Man.
Uh-huh.
And the teacher described to us exactly how these numbers looked in the show, which made a big difference. It made an enormous impression on me. From that day on, I was fascinated by musical theater.
Did you live near New York? Could you see Broadway shows?
I lived in upstate New York, so it was about a 2.5-hour trip, and I had never been to New York, and I never did get to New York until I was 18.
So for a long time, musicals were about the cast recordings.
Yeah, absolutely, and what I could read. I started trying to arrange to get the New York Times every Sunday, which wasn't easy where I was growing up, and I just began looking for anything I could that was going to tell me what that was about.
Now, how did this lead you into the business of music copyrights?
Well, almost accidentally. I moved to New York with no intention as far as what my career would be, and I didn't even understand what music publishing was all about, as most people don't. And it simply was that as a result of the music I was interested in, I once got into a conversation with someone who happened to have a stack of interesting sheet music in front of him. And it turned out that he worked at MPL Communications, and within a matter of a couple of years, I was working there also.
You know, tell me if I'm wrong, doesn't Michael Jackson who did Michael Jackson buy copyrights for music? Did he write, why am I thinking about Paul McCartney copyrights?
Okay. What Michael Jackson,
Beatles copyrights.
Exactly. What Michael Jackson purchased was the old Lennon-McCartney catalog.
Does this make any sense that Paul McCartney owns the copyright to Frank Lesser and Michael Jackson owns the copyrights to the Beatles?
Well, it doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't make any... there isn't anything wrong with it either. The only reason it looks odd at all is that most people aren't aware that anyone owns the rights to anyone's music, that an individual would own rights. We always think of it something as either that the writer owns or that some company owns, but we forget that they're often owned by individuals. And it just looks a little strange to us when we see a writer owning another writer's works. In fact, sometimes that's an ideal situation. Frank Lesser, one of the reasons Frank Lesser was a great publisher is that he was a great writer, and he thoroughly respected what songwriting was and who songwriters were. And he treated them in a way that no corporation that wasn't controlled by songwriters was ever going to treat them.
So who did Frank Lesser publish besides himself?
Mainly Meredith Willson.
Wrote The Music Man.
Who wrote The Music Man and The Unsinkable Molly Brown. Richard Adler and Jerry Ross, who wrote The Pajama Game and Damn Yankees. And Robert Wright and George Forrest, who wrote Kismet. And they also wrote Song of Norway, but that was before their association with Frank Lesser. And he not only represented them. With all of those writers, he was a very important part of the work they did on their productions. One of the things he had a knack for was working with writers who were basically pop music writers and showing them what was possible in the world of musical theater. Adler and Ross were not theater composers before they met Frank Lesser. Mm-hmm. Meredith Willson was not. He'd had a long and distinguished career as a radio performer. He was at one time did comedy on the Burns and Allen show on the radio. He also was the orchestra leader for radio for many years, as well as a popular songwriter, and had not written a musical in all of those years, but had, of course, an enormous amount of trunk material that was ready for someone to come along and give him an idea of how to structure it. And you can see what came of that, one of the greatest musicals in our history.
So you handle the copyrights now on Frank Lesser's music. What's happening to those copyrights now that Most Happy Fella is being performed again? Guys and Dolls is back on Broadway. There's a revival in the works for How to Succeed. How is that affecting you?
Well, the main way it's affecting us is that we're very busy. This is a very exciting period for us.
Busy doing what?
Once a show is on Broadway, every other kind of activity turns up for the songs in that score and also for the other songs by the same writer. We suddenly get calls from television producers, film producers, people who are putting together television commercials, people who are putting together books on musical theater and want to quote from the songs as examples of the best kind of theater writing. It creates activity in every area of popular music.
So what do? You just figure out how much to charge them or whether they can use it or not?
Well, how much to charge them is an important consideration, but just as important is the way the material is going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't valuable to charge someone a large amount of money for a use of the song that doesn't serve the song and doesn't honor the writer's intentions and doesn't help to bring that song to the public in a way that is going to make the song appreciated both now and in the future. One of the things that makes music publishing different than a lot of other industries is that you have to constantly be looking at the future when you license the song, because it's very easy to overexpose a song or to have it used in a way that changes the public's perception of it. For example, a bad TV commercial use of a song can make that song unusable for anything else, because that particular image will always be in the audience's mind when they hear the song.
Of all the cast recordings of Guys and Dolls, the original show, the movie, the new Broadway revival, do you have a favorite?
Well, I don't think there's anything odd about saying that the favorite for me will always be the original cast album. And that takes away nothing from any other version that's been done, including the current revival, which we all know is very exciting. But there's a combination of things there. One is that that's the version we've learned, and another is that's the version that Lesser supervised. I also am a little out of the ordinary in thinking that the film version is a perfectly legitimate version also. That's not the popular opinion, but actually I think that with some questionable casting choices, it's actually a very well put together film.
Joseph Weiss, thank you very much, and thank you for commercially releasing these recordings.
Thank you.
Joseph Weiss produced the new CD, An Evening with Frank Lesser, on the DRG label.
They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me, the pickings have been lush. And yet before this evening is over, you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners, you might refuse to stay. And so the best that I can do is pray. Oh, luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight. Luck, let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Luck be a lady with me. A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair, it isn't nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. So let's keep the party polite. Never get out of my sight. Ooh, stick with me, baby. I'm the fella you came in with. Luck be a lady. Oh, luck be a lady. Luck be a lady tonight.
Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Joyce Lieberman is our technical director. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, a labor perspective on American business. We'll talk with Irving Bluestone, retired vice president of the United Auto Workers, and his son Barry Bluestone, a professor of political economy. They've collaborated on a new book about the future of labor-management relations. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.